numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We have a very exciting lineup of guests. We're speaking to a team, Elsbeth Moit and Frederick Weaver. They are experts in sexual enlightenment, tantric healing, and yoga. We also have Connie Allen online. Connie was a blackjack dealer for over 16 years, and we're going to learn about little edges that the player could get through a dealer's perspective. We have a returning guest, Steve Boucher. He does e-recording of documents all over the country, and we're going to talk a little bit about Kansas, or maybe Kansas is a little bit like Oz. We have another returning guest, Danny Kopke. Danny has been on Fox and Friends. He's an expert on savings, keeping track of your expenses, and budgeting. We, of course, have our regular segment with Fred Claridge, the stock market moron, lost $1 million in one day, and we'll learn how he did and what his advice is. And most interesting and most exciting, I want to tell you about our forthcoming television show. We are going on television. Yes, we are. And if you go to our website, stuartvenner.com, click on television, and you could see a three-minute promo explaining the type of things we're doing on our show. It's going to be great, and I know you're going to love it. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Got a couple online. They're a team. We have Elsbeth Mott and Freddie Zentel Weaver. They are going to talk to us about sexual enlightenment, healing, love, and intimacy. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
It's really good to have you on. Now tell us, I think everybody could use some sexual healing. tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, actually, when we use the term sexual healing, we don't speak about people that they are sick or something's wrong with them. Sexual healing more in the sense of coming back to wholeness, you know, when we look at our body and our emotional being, it's really coming back to integration. And so what we have developed in the book and in our work is how we can reconnect in that way with ourselves and then bring this to our relationship to become more fulfilled, more loving, feel more intimate.
And you use this tantra, don't you?
Yes. What we've done, Stuart, is we've integrated some of the Eastern approaches to tantra or sex consciousness as the yoga of it, and it was one of the original yogas of the energetic body.
I see.
And some of the Western approaches to transformation in terms of generative language and creative self-discovery, how we discover ourselves through music, movement, and art. And we put those collectively together with working with consciously sexual energy, and there's certain dynamics that we can get into that we employ that allow us to draw on what we call the systemic intelligence or enlightenment that can happen with consciously using sexual energy.
Well, that is very cool. So you do yoga too. Do you do yoga nude?
actually don't do yoga nude.
Well, that's too bad. I would like that idea of sleeping on your head naked.
That's not necessarily what we do in the workshops.
However, you know, the intimate homework that we give to our students, they do this in the privacy of their home or hotel room, wherever they may stay while they are at attending the workshops or retreats. And so they do get the opportunity to, you know, however they wish to do that, closed, unclosed, depending on their comfort level.
Well, that is very good. And where is your studio located?
Our institute is in Chicago, Illinois. We're right in the city of Chicago. Okay. Though we do travel some with our work, we are on faculty at Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California.
Oh, that's a great place. I remember that from the 60s.
Yeah, it's still going strong.
Wow. And now you help these people with sexual healing and through this. And do you watch them have in their intimate moments, kind of like Masters and Johnson did?
No, what we do is we really don't help anyone. What we do is share approaches that people can use to shift how they are being in the bedroom with their beloved or with their partner, and systemically how they listen and move in their life around what they want to create and what feels right for them to do. So again, what we have, the way we've designed the workshops are that there's no nudity or...
Oh, darn. I was trying to get this to be more lascivious.
Yeah, so anyway, Stuart, where we focus on, you know, you mentioned Masters and Johnson, they really pioneered how we react in our bodies when we get sexually aroused. Where we come in is how can we use that sexual energy, that is life force energy, because without it, none of us would be talking here on the phone. How can we listen to that energy, like tune into that energy and make it useful to us in the bedroom, in self-love, but also how can we harness that energy to use it in our life, our work, how we create relationships, how we have ideas, becoming creative. So this is, you can see that this goes beyond the bedroom, and it is also about the bedroom.
I think that is wonderful. In fact, this is something good you could learn for your first date.
Oh, no, absolutely.
No, no. So you don't take this lesson to Christian Mingle.
Yeah, well, yeah, we all could. You know, what's interesting about this energy, Stuart, is that it was creating life before we were aware of our own existence as thinking Homo sapiens. And when we're in it, whether you're listening to what we're doing or not, we're more open, loving, vulnerable, receptive. Chemically, we change. Oxytocin's released. Endorphins are enhanced. Serotonin. So if we're in that state anyway when we're in this energy, with the dimensions that we bring consciousness to, which are the meditative mind or the observer, so we do practices in our workshops that teach more of the meditative practice and developing that, conscious breathing, so parasympathetic versus sympathetic, and working with life force energy in its subtle and its aroused forms with an intention allow us to get a little closer to, and in terms of that listening and how we're creating our life and how we can create more happiness and fulfillment.
And happiness is certainly something everybody needs. Now, you've written a book, haven't you?
Yes, it just came out. It's called Sexual Enlightenment, How to Create Lasting Fulfillment in Life, Love, and Intimacy.
Well, that's quite a title. Sexual Enlightenment, How to Create Lasting Fulfillment in Life, Love, and Intimacy. Mm-hmm. Great title. How can people get this book?
Oh, they can get it on our website, tantranova.com, tantranova.com. or on Amazon.
Okay, so everybody, you can go to their website, which is tantranova.com, T-A-N-T-R-A-N-O-V-A, or you can go to Amazon and you can get this book. Again, we're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Moit, and did I say that right? Moit.
Elizabeth Moit.
Elizabeth Moit and Freddie Zentel Weaver. They are a couple. They are sexual coaches, and they're going to give you what you need to help your intimacy and help yourself and get your life back the way it should be. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns staring out the window at the darkness. The boredom overtook us, and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I made my life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind me saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for count when the dealing's done."
Welcome back to the show. I have Connie Allen on the line. Connie is a blackjack dealer, and she's a casino expert and an author, and we're going to talk about gambling. Connie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stuart. Look forward to being on it.
Where did you deal?
I'm originally from Cincinnati, Ohio. The casino was in Indiana, and it was one of the Hollywood casinos in Indiana.
Okay.
So I was here for like 16 years.
I'm a little familiar with the gambling business. I lived in Vegas over 20 years.
Okay.
And I originally went there working for Maura Schenker at the Dunes. So this is a subject that's kind of dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Did you deal anything but blackjack? Did you deal craps or anything else?
No. I know that I got to watch it enough times, you know, but sometimes you just pick and choose your games you want to play, because the like craps is a really fun game, they say, to deal. But for the dealers, it's a very exhausting game to deal.
Oh, it's a lot of work, sure.
Yeah, it really is, and it's a lot of confusion. And the dealers, if you're not fast enough, can run you over, so to speak. And,
well, I myself have a system. I have a gambling system. Now, it hasn't worked yet, but my system is that I don't leave the casino till either I run out of money or the casino runs out of money. And
whoa.
It hasn't worked yet. But that's my system.
There, yeah, you have to have a budget, though. I mean, the average person.
Connie, tell us a little bit about blackjack. You think that maybe counting cards, are there things people can do to get an edge?
Well, let's say, you know, there's plenty of books out there for them to count cards, teach themselves how to count cards. However, and that's not illegal to do. However, you must realize that there's going to be a lot of surveillance cameras on you, and the casinos are very in tune to watching people count their cards, and they will come and tap you on the shoulder and ask you to leave the casino if they suspect it.
And I remember a long time ago when Bob Stupak was alive, he owned Vegas World and then the Stratosphere. Mm-hmm. He would advertise that he wanted card counters.
That he wanted them?
He advertised for them. He just did. He was kind of a maverick and a nutty guy, but he did advertise for it.
Well, that's so funny because we had a guy, I do not know his last name, but his first name was Sal, and he was a professional card counter, and to the point where he's not welcomed into any casino because they...
Wow.
I guess he must not have heard about them because...
But I guess if you shuffle every deal, it doesn't work too well, does it?
Well, you know, for us, we had a six-deck shoe.
Shoe, uh-huh.
So that was quite a few cards, and they can still count cards with the six-deck shoe. Sal was very interesting because since he was no longer accepted in the casinos, he was going to the casinos and holding meetings for the dealers and employees to show us how people cheat. And then he also teaches... teach them blackjack.
I actually saw something many years ago at the, it's not there anymore, the old Showboat Casino in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Remember then? They had a really, this was a really sloppy dealer, and he was actually cheating, and it was so obvious. I just got up and left. I didn't want to make a scene.
The dealer was cheating?
He was. The dealer was cheating. He sure was.
Yeah, huh. Was he cheating for the house?
For the house, yeah.
Oh, okay, because usually the dealers, if they're going to cheat, they're going to cheat for the players.
I never saw that before, honestly. But what strategies do you think people can employ to help give them a little bit of edge when they're gambling?
Well, that's really why I wrote the book, because I have witnessed over the 16 years that I was dealing how some of the players don't know much about blackjack at all, and they'll sit at a table with people who are experienced blackjack players, and the old saying long time ago used to be, in fact, I think pretty close to around the time I started dealing for the first time, the old saying was, oh, it doesn't matter what you do at the blackjack table, because the one who's got the weight on his shoulders is the last spot.
Uh-huh.
Their base. And through the course of dealing, I realized that that was not true, because I watched statistically over and over again that if second base or whatever would take a card that he should not have taken, that, and if the last spot didn't have to take a card, that he caused me to get 21 because he took my bus card. So that's why it's so important for all seven players to learn how to play the game correctly. And if you don't know how to play it correctly, then you should really try to go to a table one-on-one with the dealer so that you don't affect all the other players.
Well, I agree with you there. I've been killed many times by some idiot sitting next to me.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. And their comment will come back to be, well, you know, I'll play my cards the way I want to play them because this is my money. And that part is true, but I really think that if they knew how to play the game, they would be more in tune to get on board with the rest of the players.
Of course. Of course, if I'm ever sitting at a table with someone like that, after a hand or two, I just get up and move.
Right.
And that's probably the best thing.
Some of them won't do that.
Now, I know, you know, everyone can be lucky. Players can be lucky, and dealers can be lucky. And I've seen when the dealers run on a good streak... or a bad streak, I mean, they'll change them.
Yes. Well, yeah.
again, going back to as a beginner blackjack dealer, I would hear some of the dealers make a comment, because especially if a player has treated them rudely, they would come back to, like, down to the break room, and they would say, boy, I just killed that guy. And I'm thinking, how did you kill that guy? Because in the beginning, even though I didn't know why, I was called what was called a dump truck, okay? I was
really?
Giving the money away. Mm-hmm. And then as the years went on, I didn't do anything different, but I no longer became a dump truck. So how some of these dealers, I don't know if it's the karma that you carry that can maybe help the players to win as far as the dealer goes, because if the dealer has an attitude or anybody at the table has an attitude, that's such bad karma that I have noticed so many people
lose. Sure. But I'm a great believer in dumb luck. Nothing can beat dumb luck.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
When the player's lucky, you get toked. So that's good, too.
Well, sure. Definitely. We like that idea.
Can you tell everybody about your book? Because this is something I definitely want to read, and I think everyone out there should, mm-hmm. because there's gambling everywhere today.
Oh, definitely. And two questions that I usually like to share with the audience is that two of the questions that they're going to probably want to ask of me is, one, there are thousands of casino books out there today, and why do you think yours is so special? Why do you think that I would really like to read your book? And two, the question would be, what about this book would benefit me? So I took the time to write down a few little things that I had wanted to share with them to show how I would like to help them.
Okay.
And the book is really, a lot of the book is for novice players, but there are things that I did, it was called statistics.
And your book is The Casino Through a Dealer's Eyes.
Yes.
And I think that answers the question, because most of these books are written by players. And written
exactly.
by a dealer, I think that really gives a perspective that other authors don't really give you.
And also, because I took my time as one individual dealer to watch so many things that took place that I shared in the book, and for the experienced dealers, I only tell them to follow these statistics that I give if you're winning, because we all know, we've been there many times, that you've been there, and it's not, it doesn't matter what you do.
Well, sure, Connie. Now, is your book available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble?
It's on Amazon. My website, the Casino Through a Dealer's Eyes, .tateauthor.com. So just remember my book and .tateauthor.com, and you can go on there. We do sell the e-book on there, too.
All right. Well, everybody, you want to read this book, especially if you're a gambler. If you don't gamble, don't bother, but I think all of us like to gamble. So Connie Allen's book. She's a blackjack dealer, and it's a casino, The Casino Through a Dealer's Eyes. Connie, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Derp 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 der Maya he, Maya who, Maya ho, Maya ha ha, Maya he, Maya who, Maya ho, Maya ha ha.
It's time I feel you got to go away, got to get away, away from my life and from my family. The government wasting all you spent, and we lost our rights. Gonna toss you bombs out and make it right. Once we ran to you, from you, this tainted cup you've given, we give you more than should be given. Tax or pay them, tell us it's not enough. Tainted cup, tainted cup.
Welcome back to the show. I have a returning guest on the phone, a man I have a lot of respect for. I personally do business with Steve Boucher. He does e-recording of documents all over the country. And we're going to talk about Kansas. Kansas is a little bizarre, some of the small counties there anyway.
Oh, dear. I keep forgetting I'm not in Kansas.
Welcome, Steve.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Now, bring our folks up to date. You run a pretty sizable business. You do document recording pretty much everywhere in the country.
48 states, a little over 1,300 counties, and we've been doing this for 7 years.
And I might say, very good job. I do business with him myself. Now, tell us about Kansas. This is very interesting.
Well, you know, I only knew Kansas from The Wizard of Oz. You know, Kansas has a lot of small counties and not much activity going on there.
No, it's certainly not Los Angeles, New York.
Well, Los Angeles is 11 million documents a year compared to the small counties that are 10,000 documents a year.
Right.
For the entire population.
Now, tell us what happened in a couple small counties in Kansas.
Well, it's really disturbing to us because everybody knows who we are because of our Google presence, and you know, if you type in a specific county, and on these websites we offer public information such as the public recording fees, the public county recording requirements, the county forms such as affidavit of value and so forth.
Right.
So our customer service department on December 3rd gets this disturbing phone call of this woman yelling. Of course, you know, I don't want to be specific as to what county.
But it's a tiny county, so small you've probably never recorded there.
We've never recorded in this county.
Okay.
So customer service comes to me, which I run customer service. So we just got this disturbing phone call. The woman was threatening us. She says she's the elected official of this specific county, and she was very rude. She was just yelling. So, of course, we go into the phone system and we listen to the tape recorded message, and I myself found it very disturbing for a public official. I couldn't believe
she cursed
what
at
our
you,
customer
I understand.
Service rep was telling us. So I listen to the message. I call the woman back, and she starts worse than she was with the customer service rep. Who are you, and this, and that. And I says, well, you know, we've never recorded with your county, but we offer on our website your fees and recording requirements. Well, I want to come off your website, and she's yelling, and she actually called me an idiot.
I've been told that a lot.
And I says, ma'am, you know, I'd like to have a clear conversation as to what the problem is. I said, there's other websites, such as Deeds.com, and, you know, different websites, Wooters, Culver's, and just 10 or 15 websites that basically have the same information. Basically, they don't do exactly what we do, but they do offer e-recording. So I explained to her the Kansas Electronic Recording Act of 2004, which is state law, and that is she is a participating county, that she would have to accept documents from third parties. Section 9. And I clearly explained it to her, and she just hung up the phone on me. It was very rude.
She didn't know what to say. She didn't know how to answer you.
She didn't know how to answer what I had just told her. And this is coming from a public official. The Tin Man or the Scarecrow must have voted for her. Okay? If you remember the song, If I Only Had a Brain.
I'm a failure because I haven't got a brain.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Well, I think that applies to some of these Kansas recorders.
Very interesting. And you think that maybe, well, we had talked a little earlier, that one of your competitors might have put her up to this?
Yes. You know, there's a thing called the Sherman Act and antitrust laws in all states, and the Sherman Act is from, I believe, 1892.
Yeah, it stops monopolies, and they're doing is a secondary boycott, in essence.
And basically, I didn't threaten her with that. Okay, one thing about Kansas is this, is out of the 30 e-recording counties, they only have one vendor, where there's other vendors, such as myself, or another very large company, and you have Xerox underneath that. That's another trusted submitter. But why she would only deal, or these other 30 counties would only deal with one vendor. So this one vendor says to a guy like myself, our company, if you want to submit documents in Kansas, you have to go through us. That's unlawful.
It's illegal as hell.
If they offer a public service such as e-recording that benefits the constituents that voted for them, why would they say, hey, you can only go through this guy? Now, through our research with our attorneys, and we're contemplating looking into this this competitor and their actions with these counties, is that we found this one county that also complained that had no reason to complain about us because we've never recorded there. We looked into specific recorders, or they call them registers there, and basically found that in 2000, this county was actually sued by a Fortune 500 company, including the register personally.
Interesting.
And I had talked to him on monopolizing public information. And what he was doing was this. He had a selected company that he would sell all the recording information to, such as, did you ever notice if you get a judgment against you, you get a letter from an attorney soliciting you?
Right.
Or, you know, and these attorneys and other companies buy these sales leads from the counties and then do their solicitations. Well, this lawsuit, from what we read of it, and this is, the complaint was like 580 pages, is that this company, which is a nationally known Fortune 500 company, said, listen, this county and this in that county in Kansas sells us information. We would like to buy information from you and add it to our databases. And this specific county register stated that they only deal with one county. Well,
with
this
public
Fortune
information,
county,
that's terrible. It's absolutely
right. This
terrible.
Fortune 500 company in 2000 filed an antitrust Sherman Act lawsuit against this county and county official in 2000. One of the guys that complained about us. It lasted 6 years. Cost the county hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayers' money. And the company finally said, hey, this isn't worth it. And they withdrew the complaint. Everybody Okay?
Unbelievable. Maybe you need to sue him again. Or is it worth spending that kind of money?
I didn't sue him myself yet. Okay? Nor do, you know, I have that authority. This is a company, and the company lawyers are looking into it. Do we care about where the Tin Man and the Scarecrow come from?
Incredible.
In the larger cities, yes. But in these county, you know, often Ozland, we really don't care if we ever record there. But our services, you know, to make it easier for attorneys, title companies, banks.
Oh, sure.
You know, and just the general public, okay?
Well, you do top-notch work, I can say that. And, Steve, can you tell everyone the name of your company? Because anyone that needs to record any documents, I urge that you go to talk to Steve and his company, and except in a little town in Kansas that you'll never go to anyway.
Yes, stay out of Kansas.
Stay out of Kansas. Tell us your company again, Steve.
eRecorderOfDeeds.com.
Okay, again, we're talking to Steve Boucher.
Days a year.
eRecorderOfDeeds.com, and I can tell you from personal experience, they're the best. Steve, thank you so much for this has been a fun interview about Kansas.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Once a week, they pay me $7.50 once a week. You see me walking tall down at the shopping mall, 'cause I'm making $7.50 once a week. Now every Monday morning when I get my pay, I'm feeling very rich indeed. I got a pocket full of money I can spend each day, so I can pay for all the stuff I need. I got a great start, but here's the hard part. I got to plan for every expense, 'cause every nickel counts when your entire allowance is only $7.50. But I do like to live it up. Every day after lunch at school, I treat myself to an ice cream sandwich. At 50 cents a piece, that comes to $2.50 every week. That's okay, I got $5 left. I'm still ahead of the game. I start with $7.50 at the top. My favorite bubble gum is 60 cents a pop. I got to choose and plan and do the best I can. I think I'm gonna have to learn to shop.
Folks, welcome back to the show. We have a returning guest online, a real good guest. We're talking to Danny Kofke. You've seen him on Fox and Friends. You've seen him all over. And Danny is going to tell us about creating a budget and how you and your family can have wealth on very little money. Danny, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Stuart, thanks so much for having me back on.
Always my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about what we're talking about budgeting.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, and you know, the B word can be that dreaded B word where people, they think it's so restrictive, almost like a diet. So, I mean, whether you call it a budget, whether you call it a spending plan, whatever the semantics that you use, the important thing is that we need to come up with an amount that we're able to spend each month or each week, so we don't go into debt and overspend, overspend on how much we're earning.
Well, if you do that, how can you keep up with the Joneses?
Right, and that's where a lot of people get in trouble, that we're constantly trying to keep up with other people. And, we mentioned the Joneses, that's a common family to use, but, we look at their appearance and think, gosh, if we only lived in their house, or if we only drove the cars that they drove, or if we only had the toys that they had. But we can't take a look inside their house at night when the debt collectors are calling and when they can't sleep at night because they're $20,000 in debt. So that is, kind of the best reason to come up with a budget, is that we do not overspend. And along with the overspending comes a lot of stress that actually makes our life much worse in the long run.
There's no question about that. I mean, we can all have champagne tastes, but if we have a beer pocketbook, we better live within our means.
Yeah, absolutely, or drink cheaper champagne, right? So that's the thing. We all have a set amount of money coming in, and, there's plenty of stories out there of celebrities that make millions and millions of dollars a year, but yet go bankrupt or are broke, and that's because we spend more than we earn. And no matter how much you make, the same principle holds true. If more is going out than is coming in, at some point in time it's going to catch up to you and you're going to be in trouble.
Unless you're the government, then you can just keep printing money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the only exception, right?
So I guess what you should do is make a budget and put down first. You have to start with your fixed expenses.
Right, and that is what my wife and I have done, and this has helped us. For 9 years, we lived off of a teacher's salary, raising two daughters, make about $42,000 a year, and have been very successful with it. We have no debt except our mortgage. We invest each month, so we're on track to retire as millionaires. We have an emergency fund in place. So that has worked well for us, is that what we do is in our checkbook, we share a checkbook, because I think that's important too. If you do, or if you are married or have a partner, you have to work together as a team. So in the checkbook that we share, we already have listed the monthly expenses that come out: our mortgage, the satellite bill, our Roth IRA, the tithe, and all those things that automatically come out. And the way we do it is, let's just say, and just for numbers ease, let's just say our salary was $2,500 a month. Let's say those expenses that we know come out total $1,500 a month. What we do is we go ahead and do $2,500 minus $1,500, and we have $1,000 left for the month to spend. And then to make it even easier, we'll divide that $1,000 by the number of weeks in a month, and usually it's four. Sometimes it's five, but most of the time it's four.
Yeah, 4.3, I think, right.
That gives us $250, and then each week we know we have $250 to spend on groceries, gas, food, etc.
That certainly is common sense, really. I know my father used to say that my mother was like Teddy Roosevelt. She'd walk into a department store and go, "Charge!"
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I mean, when we talk about money issues, they are common sense. I mean, it's on paper, spend less than you earn.
But, it's not that easy, because, I mean, it should be that easy, but you get enticed all the time with television, with commercials, with how easy it is to get credit, and it can be a terrible trap.
Yes, it is. I mean, advertisements play a huge role. I read a study, I think, by American Demographics magazine, and it was something like, by the time the average American's 21, will have been exposed to like 23 million advertisements. So that's a big thing. But also, and this is where I think money problems and weight problems, they go hand in hand. Most of those problems, it's not because of the numbers. It's because of the emotions. Many of us, unfortunately, in our lives, we are unsatisfied or unhappy in some area, whether it's with our spouse and our job, spiritually, whichever. But we use money and buying things that we can't afford to mask our unhappiness. And, if I go out and buy a brand new shirt or a brand new pair of shoes, whatever, it does feel good the first five or six times I wear it, but then after that, that item becomes old. And if we're basing our feelings of happiness and satisfaction on items, well, then it's just this vicious cycle, because once that item becomes old, I have to go buy something else, and then eventually that becomes old, then I have to buy something else, and it just compounds. So to me, money problems, I think they're 85-90% emotional, because most of us can do the math. We know we shouldn't put stuff on credit cards if we don't have the money in the bank to pay for it, just like we know we shouldn't go near our favorite fast food restaurant and order a number two and supersize it, but there's something at that time that makes it feel good. So that, to me, is money problems. We have to get to the underlying issue, and for many of us, the reason that we are in debt is because of the emotions.
That's right. You don't really need that new car, do you? I mean, you can get a plenty good old car.
No, we're in the country now where we have the fragrance, the new car smell, so you can spray it, you know, to make it seem new. So that is where a lot of people, we base, unfortunately, a lot of our happiness on things. I mean, we live in one of the wealthiest nations on earth, yet thousands and thousands of people seek counseling because they are unhappy. So it just shows, yes, money's important, and I'm not trying to say that it isn't, but when we base it all and think it's the end-all, be-all, and it automatically leads to happiness, well, we're living a false life because, I mean, you and I probably know people that make a lot of money but are miserable. So, yes, money takes away a lot of worries, but it ultimately isn't, you know, it's not the leading source of happiness. We have to find contentment in other areas. Money does. I mean, if you are a happy person, when you have more money, you're going to tend to do things and probably be more generous.
Sure.
But at the same token, if you're a stingy person to begin with, once you get more money, then you become stingier and you complain more. So I think money does. It helps us live out who we truly are.
And, you know, when you go shopping, I was reading in some of your notes that make a list of what you're looking for, because it's pretty easy to get those impulse items, isn't it?
Definitely. And this it comes into play with grocery shopping a lot. I've talked to people I work with, and they go grocery shopping every day. They don't plan out their meals ahead of time. And a lot of times when you do that, think about it. If you work a long, hard day, you're tired, you're hungry at the end of the day, the last thing you feel like doing is thinking about cooking a meal at home. So you go to the grocery store, and at the end of the aisles, they're masterful at placing those items that they know are going to catch your eye. And if you're in a weak moment, bam, you just buy it, put it in the car, and then you overspend. But if you make it a habit of making a list for the week, planning out your meals, and then you go when you're not hungry and when you're not stressed, so you pick a day during the weekend, and you go, and then you load up, and then it alleviates you having to go to the store every day and then giving in to the temptation. We have to set ourselves
sense.
Up for success.
Danny, are you ever guilty of impulse shopping?
I'm really not. I usually think about things. I can't tell you the last time I really bought something on impulse. Because it's so ingrained in me.
You have marvelous willpower. You really are self-disciplined. You've written a book.
It's choices, you know?
That's
and
right.
That's where I look at it. Of course, if someone pulls up next to me in a shiny BMW, of course I want it. I mean, I'm like everyone else, but then I just weigh the options. I'm either A, going to have to get out of teaching and get a higher paying job, B, I'm going to have to get a second job and spend less time with my family, or C, my wife's going to have to take on a full-time job for the rest of her life to afford what we want. And when we analyze our overall lives, those materialistic items...
And you just drive the older car.
For us
makes
to
sense.
Want to change our ways.
Danny, can you tell us about your book and how folks can get it? Because this is pretty important information.
Yeah, the latest book is A Simple Book of Financial Wisdom, Teach Yourself and Your Kids How to Live Wealthy with Little Money. Available in some bookstores, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And probably the easiest way, if you just do a Google search of my name, DannyKof as in Frank, K-E, you can find that. You can go to my blog page, order it from there, and find out more about me as well.
Well, Danny, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. I think we've all learned a lot.
Even if Fred was a little... special.
Fred was kind with good intent, but just a little different. Oh, special Fred. Mama dropped him on his head. Now he's not so bright instead. He's a little bit special.
Even if Fred was a little special.
Fred was kind with good intent, but just a little different. Oh, special Fred. Mama dropped him on his head. Now he's not so bright instead. He's a little bit special.
Folks, we have our weekly segment with Fred Claridge, the stock market moron. Fred, of course, if you remember, lost $1 million in one day. Fred, welcome back to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. It's much warmer here than it is in New York.
It's cold here, too, in Florida. Fred, tell us a little bit about how you did this last week.
Well, this last week, as usual, when the market was down, I had a couple of wonderful days. Today, the market was up 117, Wow. And I'm only down a few thousand dollars. So I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure how this works. But I want to talk about a stock today that really is beyond belief. The stock is called Neurocrine Biosciences. It's over the counter. I don't want anyone to go out and buy it. It's NBIX. Now, I was in this stock, probably 3-4 years ago. The stock had gone from 70. I got in around 15. It went to about 1 or 2. But they had a beautiful drug that was supposed to compete with all of the sleeping drugs, except it didn't make you drive a car like the Kennedys did. But the thing that the FDA drove them crazy. Well, today they have another drug, and the stock is up $8.12 at $18. Can you imagine
if
one day the stock is up 85%, but it's a different drug? The point I'm trying to make is that for your listeners, if you're in a field in which you're an expert, if you're a mechanic and you know automobiles, if you're a doctor and you know various drug companies, there are some real steals out there. And I remember, Stuart, years ago you actually bought a stock called Geron. You remember that?
I do.
12 years ago. And that was a stock that was fluctuating. Well, that still exists, and every once in a while, they're looking for, I believe it's called oncology, they're looking at cures for cancer.
I think I took your advice and bought that, and I think I lost my rear.
Probably, but that's why people have belly buttons to screw their rear on tighter.
So, Fred, let's get this straight now. Are you in on the stock right now?
Of course, it went up.
So you don't own it?
I'm lucky. No, I don't own it, but I noticed it because I had lost a lot of money in the stock when I bet on it. At that time, a company called Pfizer, one of the major drug companies, was going to buy their sleeping potion, but the FDA never approved it, and Pfizer cut the deal. But
so tell us again the name of that stock, Fred.
Neurocrine Biosciences. The symbol is N as in Nancy, B as in boy, I as in Isabel, X.
Now, Fred does not own it, so you'd probably be smart
it,
to buy it.
I don't want you to buy it, not when it's up it's up 85% today. It's too late.
Well, as long as Fred doesn't own it, it's probably a good bet. But let us know when you buy it, and then everybody needs to sell.
Oh, there's an old Russian word. It's called Soros. But if Soros means you got big trouble, baby.
Well, when Fred buys, remember you sell. Fred, thank you again for the great advice.
This is Stuart Venner. I really want to thank you for tuning into this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, talk with us, or make suggestions for topics or guests, then follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Stuart Venner or Facebook at facebook.com/Stuart Venner's World. Remember, you can hear all of our shows and see what's new at stuartvenner.com. If you want to hear the Stuart Venner Show in your own area, contact your local radio station and request us. In fact, hound them. Tune in next week for more amazing guests and stories. Thank you.
I wet myself. Aren't you ashamed?